Lovehamo homa programme yauna ya sizu masalicho ukala la mvulo kuisala butano hola ya bishimingwi haina ni mizuzu ya mashumi ya malalo kuisala hola ya pili ya msihari nina maana risa ya latea kankai komlu televize
Eagle FM the eye
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana unongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doini nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamwili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma felane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and a warm welcome to all our listeners joining us from across the country and beyond the borders of Namibia. Thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM, the home of insightful conversation and real national dialogue. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and this is On The Reading News Analysis. It's Monday, the 19th of January, 2026, and the time is 4 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. Now, as a new week begins, daily life across Namibia is once again in motion. From early morning commutes and school routines to businesses reopening their doors and communities, setting fresh priorities, the rhythm of the week has returned, bringing with it renewed expectations, responsibilities, and challenges. Now, across the country, conversations remain firmly centered on the cost of living, service delivery, public safety, health, and economic recovery. Now, these issues continue to influence household decisions, strain community resources, and shape national discourse as Namibia navigates the early weeks of the new year. Now, welcome to On The Reading News Analysis, your trusted source for the latest news and developments in Namibia and beyond. Now, right here, we bring you comprehensive news coverage, breaking stories, in-depth analysis, and exclusive reports that place context at the center of every headline. Our live stream service via our website delivers real-time updates on current affairs, politics, business, technology, health, entertainment, and community issues, keeping you informed wherever you are. From 1300 hours to 1430 Monday to Friday, we provide credible voices, expert insight, and journalism that doesn't just inform but empowers as well. So today's program focuses on key national and regional developments shaping the start of the week, including, of course, health, housing and service delivery challenges, economic trends, and community safety concerns, and what this means for Namibians as they plan for the days ahead. You can tune in all Eagle FM through all Eagle FM frequencies, pardon me, stream us live via the Eagle FM app, that is, download the Eagle FM app, and join in on the conversation by subscribing to our WhatsApp channel for breaking news, discussions, and audience polls. This is On The Radar. Let's now turn to today's top stories. The Namibian government is rolling out a subsidized, that is, effectively free tertiary education program starting in 2026. Now, meaning that tuition and registration fees at qualifying institutions will be covered by the state for eligible students as part of a phased implementation. Now, this policy aims to expand access to higher education and reduce financial barriers for students from low and middle income households. Now, following the Minister of Health, pardon me, the Minister of Education, that is Sanet Steenkamp, announcement on Friday, a key eligible change announcement during that announcement is that the non-tuition household income threshold for subsidized support has been increased. Previously, households with incomes up to 100,000 qualified for a certain support. Now, this threshold has now been raised to 300,000 Namibian dollars. Now, this matters as more students qualify. The increase broadens eligibility to include more low and middle income families who would otherwise struggle to afford higher education. The non-tuition income threshold refers to the combined household income used to decide who can get support for tuition and registration fees under the new system. Of course, we will be discussing this in more detail today. For now, let's take a listen to what the Minister Sanet Steenkamp announced on Friday, for those of you who missed it.
Fellow Namibians, the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture wishes to take this opportunity to once again inform the Namibian public on the implementation of the subsidized tertiary education following the numerous inquiries received through the media and other platforms. This intervention is in direct response, as was said by the Deputy Minister, to the call by Her Excellency, our President, Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, who urged all of us as Namibians to support but also safeguard access to education as a cornerstone for national development, social justice, and youth empowerment. Government's commitment and the funding assurance. I wish to assure the nation that subsidized tertiary education will continue as planned. Government has secured the funding for 2026 academic year, and eligible students who meet the requirements at public or private tertiary institutions will be subsidized for their registration and tuition fees for their primary qualification. This reform is being implemented through a phased approach, recognizing the complexity of the education ecosystem and the need to ensure stability, quality, but also fairness. Engagements with institutions and stakeholders is a topic that I wish to also briefly make reference to. Over the past weeks, the Ministry have engaged extensively with key stakeholders and prominent role players to ensure a smooth and inclusive implementation. These engagements included regulatory authorities as well as training institutions. Today, the Ministry concluded consultations with private tertiary institutions through their representative bodies, Association of Private Higher Education Institutions in Namibia, and Association of Technical Vocational Education Training Institutions in Namibia. And these engagements have been critical in aligning the expectations and implementation modalities across the sector. We further acknowledge, in terms of the clarification on minimum standards and funding requirements, that much more need to be said in this regard. And we do recognize that many of the public queries relate to the minimum standards for higher education institutions, which is a policy instrument aimed at ensuring that every Namibian student, I beg your pardon, receives quality, credible, and relevant education. The minimum standards for higher education is a long-term quality assurance framework intended to strengthen academic standards, institutional credibility, and graduate outcomes across the sector. The benefits include, for one, improved quality, the comparability of qualifications, and accountability across institutions. However, as approved, these standards will be implemented in the phased approach over the period of 3 years. The Ministry further wishes to clarify that for the year 2026 academic year, the 2026 academic year, the Namibia Student Financial Assistance Fund requirements will remain the basis for the determining funding eligibility. That is in context of the approved subsidized funding model. And these requirements, as you may be all well aware, are well established and focus on supporting Namibian students pursuing their primary qualification at accredited TVET and higher education institutions. For a smooth transition, and to ensure that no eligible student is disadvantaged, subsidized tertiary education in 2026 will be implemented through the existing NSFAF funding requirement with an expanded scope of coverage, while tertiary institutions will continue to apply the current admission criteria. I hope that, ladies and gentlemen, is very clear. Being admitted, can we do better on that? Now, having said that, I also wish to state the following. Being admitted into a tertiary institution does not automatically guarantee funding, but funding decisions will be guided by the existing transparent requirements. I wish for a moment to focus on the issue of equity and inclusivity. The Ministry remains cognizant of the historic challenges and educational barriers faced by historically marginalized communities, including the Ovatue, the Ovadimba, and the San. In this regard, the Ministry reaffirms its commitment to supporting their access to tertiary education, including the application of carefully considered targeted deviations from administrative support measures are implemented to enable them to reach parity with their peers. Let me now focus on non-tuition support. Government has increased the...
Save so much more in 2026 at WB. Get 1 liter Clover Ultra UHT milk for $19.99. 1 kg Top Score Instant Maize for only $23.99. 500 gram Bacomo Corn Flakes for only $29.99. And 8 Twin Saver 300 sheet 1-ply toilet rolls for only $33.99. See more January specials at vurmanbrock.com. We care.
tuition support. Government has increased the non-tuition household income threshold to 300,000. Government has increased the non-tuition household income threshold to 300,000, broadening access to students from low and middle income households and reinforcing government's commitment to inclusivity and equity. There is never an intentional attempt to exclude anybody. As emphasized by Her Excellency the President, subsidized tertiary education is a national project that requires cooperation, close coordination and collaboration, but also understanding and the fact that we must know it's a shared responsibility. While significant progress has been made, we do admit that there are complex issues that still will have to be addressed progressively as the implementation continues. I therefore call upon all public and private tertiary institutions, all students, trainees and parents, all education stakeholders and the broader Namibian public to work with government in good faith. Work with us in good faith as we implement this transformative reform in a manner that protects quality, but also promote access and safeguards the sustainability of our education system. I wish to reassure you that the Ministry remains committed to transparent communication and will continue to engage stakeholders as we move forward. I thank you.
And there you had it from the Minister herself, the Minister of Education, Sanet Steenkamp, just breaking down on what the Ministry intends to do or is intending to roll out. Now, of course, joining me live in studio this afternoon is Bernard Kavahu, Board Chairperson of SUN, let me put it like that, that is Students' Union of Namibia. Kavahu, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon to all Namibians.
Good afternoon. And also joining me live in studio is Mr. Kennedy Kandume, NSFAF's Acting Chief Executive Officer. Very good afternoon, sir, and welcome to the studio.
Good afternoon, happy and afternoon to our listeners.
Now, of course, we're talking about the 300,000 income threshold. Now, myself, I would say I was privileged to understand this last year at the announcement of the online NSFAF online application. But I take it that not everybody gets what's being spoken about. And especially when I say not everybody, I'm talking about the parents. You know, we always need to break down certain elements of news so that the broader Namibia gets to understand. So let me start off with Mr. Kennedy Kandume. Explain to us, what do they mean? What is the meaning of 300,000 income threshold? What exactly does it entail?
The meaning of that has got, one has to put it in historical context.
Okay.
You remember the NSFAF requirement, as when it comes to income, for we said previously, a household or a student's income, parental income, should not be above 500,000. That's now the historical context to it, and that was for both tuition and non-tuition fee. With the advent of the subsidized education, you might also recall that the minister referred to the task team that was put together to look into these things and come up with criteria of who qualify for subsidized education. What then happened is that the task force came up with a new threshold, and that was 100,000, meaning that anybody that is coming from a household with income of 100,000 will not be qualified, only for those that are coming from a household with less than 100,000 or with 100,000 or less qualify for to receive non-tuition fee. And I must make it clear here that we are talking about non-tuition fee.
Okay.
As the subsidized is talking to tuition and registration, and it has got its own criteria. I think the minister also alluded to that.
Mm-hmm.
So that has brought a lot of uneasiness. I mean, for obvious reason,
yeah.
I mean, 100,000 is very less. If you translate that into a monthly income, we're talking about 8,000 a month. If you take some other necessity, there's actually nothing. So that cry has then reached government, and then government revised the threshold from 100,000 to 300,000, basically.
Mm.
So what it means now is that anybody whose household income is less than 300,000, then they qualify for to receive non-tuition fee.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. By that 300,000 threshold, does it? You say household, so which means it implies two payslips of the both parents, or is it only looking at one?
It's a combined income for a household. That's why I'm using the term household.
Mm-hmm.
It's a combined income.
Mm-hmm.
If there are two parents in the particular house who are both employed or who are both earning income,
yeah.
So that will be put together for qualification or
mm-hmm.
for the purpose of non-tuition fee.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Kennedy, in the aspect where in a particular household has three children going to tertiary education and the combined income threshold is 300,000, are there any special consideration, or it remains precisely that?
At the moment, it remained precisely that. Remember, in the previous funding model, if I might put it that way,
yeah.
We used to look at if a parent or parents are looking after three children or student at the institution of higher learning,
mm-hmm.
then we have a consideration that the other children will have to be looked after.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, tuition fee and registration is already taken into account for
okay.
both. Yeah, we are only talking about non-tuition fee.
Okay. Okay. Benakavau, over to you now. How has the son welcomed this, or how do they take it? What's your remarks on that?
Well, I think we can say fantabulous, marvelous. The very students are happy. The parents are happy,
mm-hmm.
to say. Like the CEO have said earlier, people, what they understood was 100,000. And when you look at that 100,000, parents came in, they called, the student also complained, prospect students who said that we from grade 1 up to grade 12 have been taken care of by the government in terms of paying our school development fund, or UPE, which they call now.
Mm.
And our parents, they might be one working, but still, to say 100,000, we might be left out. So it's a celebration. That's why if you look at all the Namibian youth, all the Namibian students are saying, we have a caring government in the Republic of Namibia, where the youth voices have been heard. So it has been tripled, not doubled, mm-hmm. from 100,000 to 300,000. Is something to applaud the government for.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of explaining now to the public, to the students, to the parents, how does it work?
Mm.
And why is it 300 now? Why not 500,000?
Mm.
Like, for example, like the other time when we proposed.
Mm-hmm.
But just like the CEO have said, is that now you are going to register for free. You are no longer going to pay the 6,000 registration fee at UNA.
Mm-hmm.
You are no longer going to pay the 2,200 or 2,100 at IUM, so at least that pressure has been taken away from you as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
So all you have to do is for a student is to register for free, and then the parents, they can come in and meet the government halfway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a celebration for everyone. It's a win for the Namibian youth.
Mm-hmm. You're right. It is a win for the Namibian youth. And I also wanted to say that good things also take time.
Yeah,
you know, we don't jump into something that perhaps you'll not be able to cater for. You would want to carefully consider and carefully put certain measures in place. Mr. Kennedy, coming back to you, what particular measures had to be put in place? I know that there was a thorough discussion last year in regards to NSFAF and how, but as being a stakeholder to education or to the Ministry of Education, what particular discussions are at the forefront also in terms of non-tuition fee, tuition fee? How exactly is that so we can really understand it better?
Okay. What is going to happen is with beneficials or potential beneficials are still expected to apply from NSFAF.
Okay.
We are just busy putting our house in order in terms of reading the system. As you can imagine, that the new changes obviously also require changes to the system enhancement and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it is expected that the beneficials apply, publication get assessed, validation done, and then out of that we then come up with who qualify and who doesn't qualify for. And I'm hoping that this time around, other stakeholders like the tax authorities and others will be able to come on board and assist us to validate the information provided by the applicant, because we really want this to benefit those who deserve to be a beneficial of this system. But mind you, government is putting up a lot of money. It's not a loan, it's a subsidy that is going there to Namibians. And what the government is saying, please, those that can assist your child to at least to a certain extent. Government is already covering tuition fee and registration. The upkeep, please come in. But and government also know that there are households who cannot come in, and hence the threshold of 300,000 to say, okay, even if your household income is 300,000, we can still assist you to provide non-tuition fee, only in the event that it's about 300,000 that you will not qualify. So there will be application to be announced, and then they will follow by proper and thorough validation as to who qualify.
Okay. There are some sayings going on that say that apparently as long as a learner has passed with 25 points in 5 and has secured, let me not say lending, maybe, they secured a course at a particular university automatically and they apply NSFAF, they will get it. Is that saying correct or...?
Yes, there is a caveat, though, because the caveat is that you remember you were saying you were privy to some of the information that were said before, maybe. You remember we are talking about that it must be a primary qualification, so meaning that you should not have already obtained another qualification. So so it must be your primary qualification first for you to qualify. So those requirements will still kick in.
Okay.
For one to qualify.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people should just be mindful of some of those requirements before they mislead the public in terms of saying for as long as you get 25, you would have been. Have 25 that you obtained 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and probably you also benefited from NSFAF before or you studied before through the assistance of someone else and you have a qualification right now. So if in that case, then you don't qualify. Yeah, there's also an exclusion criteria of saying who qualify, and that's also one of the exclusion criteria.
Okay, let's pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, we'll be back to continue. We're just getting started. Stay tuned right here on the Radar News Analysis.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eling usala butokwa kwa sichaba sana Namibia sesipila mwamu wa sizo. Ye kitemuso ya butokwa kuzwele lalikola njimbo bundui mezi ni pukelezo ya mubu. Muteleze kaswanelo ni kuikave aling usala butokwa le ni mabasi amina. Vao mpila mabapa ni vona mane chwalo ni mizwale. Mwika mbuse kwa kezo ya kulekisa ni kuleka mubu wa sizo. Livaka kila kuli, mubu wa maino mana Namibia ulo wilo kimubuso. Miha kusika alumelwa ni hainyani kulekiswa manzila ifika mbaifi. Kuitenga mwaka ulo ya tekiso ya mubu uo, kuongi waku baka ulo ya kulova mulao. Mubu wa sichaba wa maino kaku ya kamulao wa buketa lizuwa wa siri mosa 2002. Uhanisa kezo ye chwalo. Zemu kwa nako talimana nizona hamu itenga mwatekiso isi kamulao kizela telela. Kamulao. Lifosi likona kulengi wa mastoki sikapa kutomela tifo ya mashirini. Kustatalisa sizuale sasichava. Kulekisa kapa kuleka mubu wa sizo kukona kutisa lifapani imizeko mahala sichava. Zemu toba kuziva kise. Mubu wa maino kiwaluna kaofela. Ni mutu ni mutu utoka kufumana kavelo ya yona. Kubihali tava za mubu zelo wa mulao. Haiva mule muhileli tava zeskani tifazwa za tekiso ya mubu. Mususuweza ni kuelezwa kubihatava ye chwalo kwa kute amina ya sizo. Katengo, kaka ike mezi kaka wona za mubu wa sizo, kapa ofisi ya likolo ya libuka ofini mina. Lususuweza hape kukona kusebeza hamuhu, kungele la chwalo ni kukona kubukeleza mubu waluna, nilimbule za nyambi, kakweza chwalo kwekeza kwa bukamuso. Mubuso hauna kubaka ulo ya sinyehelo ya mubu, zeti swakiri tekiso za mubu kwa mukunda. Muhupule, mubu wa sichava wa maino wa kataleha, lubu keleze kaswanelo. Luitumezi kwa salisano ya mina. Lingusa la wireless le. Litu sizwe katuso ya mashiringi kuzuelela kwa mubusu wa naha Namibia ni naha Germany. Mwaka ulo ya panka ya Germany Development Bank. Kutualitava kabutungi za butokwa. Mukwane kuzuela kwa office ye libuka ufini mina. Kapa kuikopanya ni mubuleli waliko olanjimo hundui mezi ni pukelezo ya mubu. Fanombolo 061-2087-604. Lipuzo kaofela ze munani zona. Mulilu mele kumoka meli walikolo.
Okay, and we are back. Like I said, this is on the Reader News Analysis. We're talking about education and not just any education. We're talking about money matters, right? The income threshold that has been increased to 300,000 Namibian dollars. Bernard Kabao, we ended off with Mr. Kennedy. And, of course, I would want you to come in on in terms of eligibility of institutions and qualification of points. Just from a student union perspective, what would you perhaps want to caution the parents in that regard?
Yes, for us as a responsible union, it's important that we protect our members who are the students.
Mm-hmm.
We are cautioning them that before they go and register to any institution, it must be legitimate. Now, what do we mean when it's legitimate?
Mm-hmm.
Legitimacy basically means students and parents must ensure that this institution is registered by the National Council of Higher Education.
Mm-hmm.
That is what the policy says. That's what the bill speak about before any institution in higher education can start to operate.
Yeah.
Anybody has the right to ask that question. Secondly, they must also look at, as much as I have the point, the qualification that I'm studying with, is it accredited?
Mm.
If it's not accredited, forget about it. It's the government's responsibility to ensure that any qualification a Namibian student study, it is accredited. It meets the national goals that the government needs to study.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just any qualification. If I've read it very well, this standard criteria, it speaks about priority field of study. So the priority field of study plays a key role. There's some areas that are already saturated. There's some areas that we feel it's even beyond the second industrial revolution. Mm-hmm. We are talking about to be at pair with the fourth, the fifth industrial revolution. It's very important to encourage our students, parents to understand before my child is going to study, why am I choosing this career? It's going to add any capacity to the child as an individual. Will the child be able to create their own employment?
Mm-hmm.
Will the child be able to enter the market competitively? That is what we are looking at. So, and I think there the government have done very, very well to avoid any fly-by-night institution, to avoid any scavengers who think it's free education now, it's time for us to milk the government. You see, for NQA, what they do, they ensure that, yes, you have an institution here. They ensure that, do you have the right trainees or do you, trainers, for example, do you have the professors, do you have the doctors, do you have any lecturers, do they have that qualification to deliver competent content? Those are some of the factors that they look into to ensure that no one is left out.
I love your point. And of course, to the parents, before I move over to Mr. Kennedy, to the parents, how do you think they could educate themselves with what is relevant now? I mean, we're also talking about TVET, which is also very important, which has been so much overlooked, and thank God now it's resurfacing. The talk of TVET are now resurfacing. So how perhaps would you say, would, as a parent now, from a parent's perspective also, how would you say perhaps our parents educate themselves on what courses their children can take without, of course, pushing them and forcing their children to take what they personally desire?
I agree with you, Happy. One thing is not to push our children to do a career which is not of their calling. That's very important. But how do parents check which career possibility, which are relevant currently? Firstly, let's talk about legibility and the credibility of that institution.
Yeah.
You go on the website of NQA, all accredited institution qualification framework, they are labeled there. So just you tick there, you get it. If they are finding it very difficult, they can also consult the different student bodies that we know. Or even SAN, they can consult us. We'll be able to check for them and tell them, yes, this institution exists, and on what page can you look at it. Now, in terms of which career choices are needy as we speak, you look at NDP goals, NDP 6, we encourage the parents also to be in touch. Sometimes we need to watch what's happening in Parliament. We need to be in touch what's happening in the current affairs. Also, we need to look within ourselves. What career do we really need currently that can add value? Let's not forget agriculture. Let's not forget TVET. Let's not forget careers whereby it can make an individual to be innovative, to come up with something for themselves, rather than just depending to be employed. Let's become employers. That's the message.
Okay. And now we head over to the CEO, but CEO, you are a very important person. There's a call coming in. On the reading is analysis. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Juju. Dafa Juju.
Yes, Uncle Bwana.
How are you? Good afternoon, madam. How are you?
I'm well, sir.
Yeah, so, yes, can I say something?
Say that again.
May I say something? Is it a chance for us to... Okay, thank you very much. I listen to is it Kandume? You say Kandume?
You're listening to Mr. Kennedy. Oh,
Kennedy Kandume. Okay, so I don't know, because I'm somewhere in the mountain. I'm not so sure whether my line is clear.
It's quite clear, sir. Just go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. So let me thank God for their leadership, how they are really facilitating those funding, the students, the government, and can we also see some kind of eagerness as to how we can convince or mobilize the young ones, those who think they have fallen. They are falling on the roadside, on the wayside, so that they can go to VTC and also make the more publications, more campaigns as to those ones, so that they can go to VTC and also to convert, you know, some of these secondary education, secondary schools, you know. They have got facility which can be expanded or converted into technical subjects. Are you getting me?
Yes, proceed, Uncle Bwana.
Technical subjects. We don't want to see those young women who are coming out from secondary education and then they restart again to do this home economic subject and technical or woodwork. so that when those VTC or secondary education that can be convertible into technical subjects, so that the industrialization and whatever that is going on there, the lack of schools or table or chairs, can be manufactured here. So how are we going to make sure that our VTC, I was listening to Dr. Mulangi some time back in Parliament, and say this VTC should become our manufacturing. When is it going to be realized? If you are allowing those young ones to fall on the roadside without functional skills.
Thank you, Uncle Bona. I believe that's clear.
Thank you very much, madam, for an opportunity.
Okay.
God bless.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Kennedy, I think, Bernard, would you like to say something to our caller? Okay, go ahead.
Yes, we appreciate the parent who came on board. Those are imperative points. And it's good, it's nation building. We need to build our nation together. We have observed that also as the student of Namibia. When you look at the reform curriculum or revised curriculum at basic education, we are looking from primary, senior primary to secondary. Within that, there's an introduction of technical and vocational education. I will concur with the elder, the parent who has spoken now, to say perhaps we are not fully ready in terms of infrastructure. When we are saying we have TVET as a module, mm-hmm. at any school, do we have the right infrastructures there? Do we have a garden at that school if it's about farming? Do we have cooking facility? So those are very, very important points with the elder is saying, and that is something that the government can implement, of course, together with PPP. And also, I think one aspect that we are forgetting, we have good policies in our country, very, very good, mm-hmm. wonderful. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to technical vocational education, what we observed at the Student Union of Namibia, we lack teachers that are trained to teach TVET subjects. That's
correct.
The direction that we go.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Kennedy, I want to applaud you that TVET is now part of the institutions that will be funded by NSFAF. Please get into that.
Thank you. No, in fact, it has been part of what we fund.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can give you a bit of history, I think about around about 2014, somewhere there, TVET students were very few, probably in the region of 4,000 per annum to 5,000 per annum.
Okay.
But as we speak, there are over 20,000. In actual fact, almost half of the students that are funded are at TVET level.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, being a combination of a public TVET center as well as private TVET center that came into being in the meantime and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So the emphasis has been paid to TVET for quite some time now. The question is maybe that we need to ask ourselves as a country as to which area of TVET that we need to concentrate on as a country. The TVET centers, as you know, historically they've been offering things like office administrations,
yeah.
and all those that one can say now they are saturated. Maybe it's about time that we focus on technical field,
yeah.
that enable us to manufacture, that enable us to come up with stable, that will be able, or even probably with this mic that I'm speaking on.
Correct.
So that should be our focus.
Okay.
Uncle Bano spoke of the conversion of some of the school into TVET centers.
Mm-hmm.
Probably it's a good point. I don't know what happened to some school that were designated for TVET training. Back in our day, you would hear of a certain school, I think one of them was Windhoek Technical School, where the TVET was the main subject.
Okay.
I don't know whether that's still the case, but I think he's alluding to things like that, that why can't we have that? You don't need to go to TVET post-secondary school. You can go to... You can do TVET right
while
away.
While in school.
If your calling is to become an electrician, for example, you can still do that after grade 10 or whatever. mm-hmm. great that you, then you take that route. I think he was talking to something like that. Yeah. Yes.
And I think that's why he brings up home ecology. I did home ecology, but then this learners are not doing that anymore.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've come to see some people knowing how to crochet, how to make a jersey and actually selling it. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, the kids lack that. So I guess he is making a really strong point to say teach them while they are young.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mr. Kennedy, I wanted to ask a question to see, for somebody who's sitting at home, maybe perhaps has 7 years ago enrolled at the university and was accredited NSFAF, they failed in their first year, didn't proceed on to do on other years as well. But then now they want to go back to university and they're hoping that perhaps now NSFAF can also be able to fund them. Will they be eligible to receive that or how do they go about it?
Are you referring to those that were funded by NSFAF before?
In the past. Yeah.
And they, for one reason or another, couldn't make it.
Couldn't continue.
The policy of you pay for yourself until you pass and progress still apply.
Okay.
If you were funded, for example, in 2024, for argument's sake, and you fail, you couldn't progress, we still expect you to pay for the year that you failed so that you then participate after you have passed and progress.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's still in place. And if I might extend that, you might call again that the new eligibility also, you are not eligible for if you have failed.
Mm.
So that still exists.
Mm-hmm. What if I'm a student and I have a module behind? Of course, I've passed on, I'm going to second year, but I have calculus one behind me that I can't afford, or my parents won't be able to afford to repay. What then? Can the fund still come in and pay it, or I have to pay for it myself?
The focus is really on the pass and progress.
Okay.
University has got requirement in terms of minimum requirement before you go to the progress to the next academic year. That's really focus. The focus. It gets complicated when you are looking at a specific module and so forth. One would like to believe that if you are doing a particular course, for example, they are the mandatory subject that you have to pass for you to progress.
Yes.
So once those are passed, then you progress to the next academic year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we take it that you have not failed, you have progressed to the next academic year.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really get to the nitty-gritty of a module. Because if it does, then it's going to be complicated and maybe a module have to be built separately where maybe a student, one bill is going to NSFAF, another one is coming to the student, which is not ideal.
Kavao, please come in that angle.
Yes, we have seen in some institution of higher learning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they copied that. Probably they didn't understand it in that context.
Yeah.
Because student progress to the following year, it's based on credits. If you have made the credit to progress to the following year, that means you have passed. So those are the basis of NSFAF funding. So there's no such thing as you take out now what the student has failed, you bill it to the student. I think that should be corrected.
Mm.
So it's about progressing, not there's a difference between progressing and repeating that year. So that if you repeat, you pay for yourself, but if you've progressed, NSFAF will cover for you. The reason why they say if you have failed, you need to repeat, so that we don't encourage failing rate. Of course, there are some who say, it's just government resources. I can fail as many times as I can.
Correct.
So government will still cover. But we must remember, these are taxpayers' money. These are our own resources. We must love our resources. We must take care of them for sustainability for our future generation. And we know that is a stimuli for someone to pass. There are those who say, hey, look at where I'm coming from. If I don't progress, who will pay for me? So it's a good thing, and we support that to us as students of Nairobi. We will never encourage and promote someone who is paying to be covered for by the government.
Yeah, because there is somebody sitting at home who would come and put in the more effort for that particular opportunity.
Exactly.
Now, Mr. Kennedy, in terms of, is it non-tuition, tuition? It's a little bit confusing. Let's talk about registration. Now, registration, students and parents are going to register. Does that mean they still get the acknowledgement letter from NSFAF to go and register, or they have to carry $3,000 to pay for registration fee?
No, they don't need to carry $3,000. At the moment, like I said, we are still putting our house in order in terms of system and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We unfortunately don't have that letter being issued to the applicant. In actual fact, the application itself has not started, but as far as NASFAF is concerned,
yeah.
I must say that institutions have been part and parcel of this process,
yeah.
and they've been briefed.
Yeah.
It's expected that institutions do not charge registration fee to whoever is eligible and standing up at their institution to register.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what we have been trying to communicate, and I think that's also what the minister has emphasized. Otherwise, it's defeating the purpose for us introducing subsidized
education
where tuition and registration is supposed to be not to be charged.
Mm-hmm.
So the message to the institution is that a person or an applicant who is eligible under this subsidies that are not supposed to pay, and the institution should not ask for them to pay for registration. We are only talking about registration at this point in time. I think the tuition fee will come later, but it is important for them to understand that they are not supposed to charge registration fee to student.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And in regards to the online application, when it is up and running, when the system is up and running, are we expecting the same old way of how NSFAF has been doing it, or now that these things have changed, are there going to be perhaps some technical changes? Yeah. Or
there are technical changes.
Okay.
As you probably are aware of the long process, a lot of information that is needed for mm-hmm. validation for both tuition and non-tuition fee.
Okay.
Right now we are talking about merely just registration for tuition fee or recording of the information, if I might put it that way,
yeah.
to say HEPI, for example, is studying at the University of Namibia, is where the Bachelor of IT, for example, mm-hmm. ICT,
mm-hmm.
Is part of, is eligible for subsidized education and so forth.
Yeah.
And then also whether HEPI would want to apply for non-tuition fee or mm-hmm. the upkeep part,
mm-hmm.
where certain information would then be required, like the parental income, as we discussed before, that would then have to be validated to see whether you really qualify and mm-hmm. eligible for non-tuition fee. So those are some of the information that have to be captured.
Okay.
So don't want to commit to a specific date, but we are at advanced stage in terms of in terms of configuring the system,
mm-hmm.
and we probably within the course of next year, within the course of this year, probably we have to announce
mm-hmm.
so that
you mean the course of the week,
the course of the week, sorry, and then also within the course of next week to mm-hmm. say this is the date that we are opening up for the application. But like I said, it shouldn't prevent institution to go ahead and register the Namibian child without paying registration fee.
Okay, that is very clear. Kavahu, anything that's coming to your mind that I didn't cover, or perhaps you have a question to Mr. Kennedy or a contribution, or I don't know, something that's quite necessary for learners, students and parents?
No, already on the student union, we received calls from parents.
Yeah.
They went to some institution of higher learning. They are asking, can we register our child? Does our child qualify for the subsidized funding?
Yeah.
We are a bit disappointed to some institution of higher learning, but this one was a smaller one. Probably it's starting now. Our understanding is that everybody has taken part
mm-hmm.
in the dialogue of subsidized funding.
Mm-hmm.
So as an institution, they must be able to know, advise the parents accordingly,
mm-hmm.
looking at the point that student have scored and say, you qualify for subsidized funding, rather mm-hmm. than saying, I was very disappointed when the parents said, I went to this institution and they are waiting for a letter from the government. A letter from where? And if they want the basis of reference, the press statement, the document from the Ministry of Education is out. They can make their basis on that.
Mm-hmm.
The requirements, the terms of eligibility, they are there, they are out. Let the parent be familiar with that. That document is a public document. Emphasis can be made from that.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, I think everyone should be able to enjoy. We just need to be honest to ourselves, both the students and the parent and the institution, so that we don't point fingers at the end of the day to say, look, There's a student who came, apparently they qualified, but NSFAP say otherwise the registration fee cannot be paid. Honesty plays a part to all of us, but giving the correct information, that is what we are looking forward to.
Nice. Yes, Mr. Kennedy, your word maybe to, I don't know, the parents, the students themselves, before they come knocking at your door?
Yes. Just to emphasize again, because technically everybody qualify for subsidized education.
Yeah.
By that, I mean it does no longer look at the income.
Mm.
For tuition and registration, the income will only come in for non-tuition part. I think that should be important.
Mm-hmm.
The second part to that is, that's what I really wanted to emphasize.
That. Okay.
Apart from the other requirement that we had discussed before of a point, there must also be certain point being obtained at the various level of education that one wants to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
For a degree, for example, there is a certain requirement that you should have this point in grade 12. For TVET from level 1 to level 6, there must be this requirement, and so on. All those need to be observed.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, then everybody then qualify, apart from to say it has to be a primary qualification. You must be studying at registered institution and also doing accredited qualification and so forth. People to be on the lookout for fly-by-night institution, as Kavar has put it. I think over the past few years, we have seen a proliferation of a lot of institutions of higher learning, particularly at the TVET level and so forth, for as long as those institutions, those applicants should be on the lookout whether those institutions are registered, number one, and whether the qualifications are accredited.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I think I won't do justice if I don't ask this question. Let them hear from the horse's mouth itself.
Okay.
So in terms of non-tuition cost, students will need then to cover their own accommodation, transport, and living expenses. Is that correct?
In terms of
non-tuition cost, will students now need to cover their own transport, own accommodation, own living expenses, and NSFAF only covers for tuition fees?
Yes, because the non-tuition fee is meant to cover that, but again also to a limited extent.
Mm-hmm.
You remember we give 17,000 per annum for those that are eligible. And then for those that are not eligible under the new funding model, obviously they would have to cover that transport and accommodation, and that's what we call now the non-tuition fee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let me get it right. Every student will be eligible for 17,000 tuition fee.
You are confusing tuition fee
with
and
non-tuition fee.
The non-tuition is the upkeep part, which you must you will only qualify if you are coming from a household with less than 300,000 as per new requirement.
Okay.
For tuition and registration, one can say almost everybody qualify for as long as you observe now the other requirement that I mentioned.
Okay.
Because this one does not look at whether your parents earn a million. It's meant to assist all the Namibian.
Mm-hmm.
For as long as now the other requirement of point obtained, it must be a primary qualification and are observed.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. Kaba, what do you say?
Well, I agree with what the CEO is saying.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone who is within the threshold of 300,000 combined income, they qualify for the 17,000 non-tuition, which they call as apparently refund. It's not refund, it's non-tuition fee. Everybody qualify within that.
Mm-hmm.
And then for tuition and registration, all Namibians qualify.
Yeah.
Regardless of how many millions your parent earn, even if your father is Mr. Kennedy, he will get a better, good salary.
No, who said that?
Why are you putting the CEO on spot?
So you qualify because the more your salary, the better your tax is.
So not better, the worse.
The worse even. So everyone qualify. It's a good thing, we should celebrate it.
Yeah.
So, but the most important thing that we appreciate for us as a union, even the child of an unemployed parent will be equivalent to a child of somebody who is working.
How?
Because they'll be able to have non-tuition fee, they'll be able at least to buy their laptop, they'll qualify to extend to be in reasonable accommodation, so at least we are breaking down that barrier. They'll be able to buy even some stationery, so they are all equal in terms of the non-tuition fee. But for tuition, everyone benefits. Something to celebrate. Historic in our country.
True.
Good time to be alive. We are part of the history that has fought for this. Our government has finally listened. All we can say now is, let's be serious. Let's study.
That's
hard work now. The doors of the university are open. Just go and register, pass. That's all.
Yeah. And receive your non-tuition fee.
Yes.
From Mr. Kennedy.
Exactly. But maybe just to add that it's not just you turn up and then institution get them. There must be some kind of validation. There must be some kind of information sharing. Who's where? What is doing? Is this person eligible to be funded and so on? All those check and balances are still in place. One of the new responsibilities that is put before NASFAF is actually monitoring and evaluation. So we have to monitor this. There must be some check and balances. We have to, after a year of the implementation, remember this is a kind of like a pilot year to say how it is go, what need to be changed and so on. So we will be monitoring. Hence the recording of the information that I referred to earlier, of whether you call it application or recording of information, but we want information so that we validate as to who is studying where, what do they have, what are they studying, and so forth. Kavao spoke up of the priority list of study. We, as a country, we really need to focus. Where is skills needed? So that we just don't fund a particular field because it attracts a lot of applicants for the sake of having qualification and so forth. There are areas that need intervention. There are areas that are critical for countries' development. So those are the ones that we need to focus on. And maybe one thing that we have not touched on is for those that are going to study abroad.
Thank you.
So we are saying, if you are going to study abroad, number one, that particular course should not be offered locally for you to be considered to study abroad, and it must be a priority field of study.
Okay.
So if it is not focused, offered locally, then it's a priority. Then you can be afforded an opportunity to go and study abroad.
Interesting.
And also maybe in the event that the course is full at the local institution, you can still be considered to go and study to study abroad, because you might want to do medicine, for example, if I might will give that an example, and there's only a quota, maybe it's only 80 that has been admitted on a yearly basis due to the space and all those, but you are admitted in Stellenbosch, for example, that consideration can also be looked into. But it's not just people traveling all over the world to go and do courses that are available local. Available local and so on. Space is still available, and you want to be funded to go to the UK and so forth. So some of those are the new changes.
I think I do appreciate the new changes. but getting to other new changes that perhaps I haven't highlighted here that are quite necessary also.
Okay. It is one is a threshold that was the main topic here moved initially from 500 to 100 to now to 300, and then also the funding in terms of going abroad and also for postgraduate. For now, hence we are saying this is a pilot kind of year. The postgraduate is excluded for now, and then we see how it goes. Does the resources allow for us to fund postgraduate and so forth? So those are some of the new changes that has been introduced with the subsidized education.
I almost said minister.
I receive.
Kennedy, would you say that there's still ongoing conversation, maybe not right now, of course, but there will still be ongoing conversation to discuss about NSFAF and perhaps looking into postgraduate studies next year and other things also, and since it's a pilot year, also seeing then what could be improved? Would you say that?
Most definitely, because it's a first year of implementing the subsidized. We'll look at what went wrong, what went right, what can be improved and so forth, and what went right but can still be enhanced. All that is what have to look into, and then so that perhaps next year, this time around, we are talking about a different, or again, a decent to what has been, to what is happening right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it is work in progress, one can say. Yeah, but it is a bold move. I think all Namibians should be happy, and they should applaud the president for such a bold move.
Yeah.
You turn up the institution, you study, you don't need to pay anything. All you need to do is to meet certain requirements in terms of academic performance and all those. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Indeed. Kabao, of course, there are still critics out there who have something to criticize. But then again, I think we also need to allow our education stakeholders to pilot whatever it is that they intend to do for us as a nation. What do you say to public out there in terms of criticism also?
Well, Rome was not built in a day.
True.
But what people are anticipating is to say government funding payment always come late. Institutions are saying what if you collapse. Now what we've been emphasizing as a union, we're speaking already with the Honorable Minister of Finance, we've spoken to the Honorable Minister of Education. We're saying let's separate the cycle of funding, whereby this one lapsed this time, for example, government lapsed the following year.
Yeah.
But we've always proposed that for NSFAF, let it be different. Let it be at pair. Let it run coherently with the institution of higher learning.
Yes.
Because the institution of higher learning, their registration starts January. So we believe NSFAF should get their money by then. So that when there's a number of students have registered, we want to see the payment of the registration fee in institutions for quality.
Yeah.
So we need that. Those are some of the critics. And we believe and we are hopeful because the president have never let us down so far. But they've said it as well.
Yeah.
So people, the administrators who are the machinery of payment, they must not sleep on duty. So we want to see these things progressing smoothly. And one of the critics we are observing, some are saying, we've been saying that the 70,000 is less. Remember, last year the state of Namibia even proposed up to 30,000.
Yeah.
It's a non-patient fee. So, but we, it's a win-win situation. Now, registration fee is scrapped. Tuition fee, it's there. So we have the 17.
Let's registration fee also scrapped.
Yes, let's see how this is work. But we are still advocating that moving forward, probably the non-tuition fee need to be increased because the living cost has increased. Just for you to pay a taxi from Okuliangava to Yunam, it's $26. So we need to look at some of those factors. But what we appreciate is negotiations are still ongoing. So that is where we are. And we are cautioning that this money which the government is giving, our taxpayers' money, which is our, we are urging institutions of higher learning to give quality education. In few years, we are no longer going to blame teachers for not being trained well for students, for learners to fail. We are going to point fingers at the institution of higher learning because now they will have the resources. They've seen the curriculum. There will be no excuses whether it's the revised curriculum or not. We have seen the challenges, so we need to resolve it. That is what we can say.
Bernard Kabao, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Thank you very much for having us.
Mr. CEO, thank you so much, Mr. Kennedy Kandoe, for making time for us right here.
Thank you, Abby. And anytime you can call on us to come and clarify anything that the public might want clarity on.
I appreciate that. Okay. And of course, there you had it from my guest, and just breaking down on this revised subsidiary education for 2026 model. As you have heard, it's a pilot and we will see how it goes. But nonetheless, we do appreciate what the ministry has been doing. And of course, critics will be there. But then again, we need to understand it better so that even if you are going to criticize, you understand what it actually entails. Now, of course, you can always call in on 0832 888 401. I repeat that slowly, 083 2888401 is the number in studio. Let's pause here now to get a trip to the marketplace. We're back with economic indicators and thereafter news beyond the borders of Namibia.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora izatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu omafelane Eagle FM the eye.
And now for some economic indicators. US dollar today is equal to 16 Namibian dollars and 37 cents. £1 sterling is equal to 21 Namibian dollars and 95 cents. One Swiss franc is equal to 20 Namibian dollars and 50 cents. And one Australian dollar is equal to 10 Namibian dollars and 97 cents. One Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 23 cents. Now let's move over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. We're starting off in South Africa and with very quite distressing news as 12 Gauteng learners were killed in a fatal crash or a fatal car accident. Let's take a listen.
Gauteng alone, it wasn't kind of similar incidents that sadly we've had to deal with in Gauteng alone. It was in July of 2024 when a private scholar minibus that was carrying pupils from Rocklands Primary and another school was hit from behind by a buggy. It subsequently overturned and caught fire. In that accident, 12 pupils actually died, the driver also losing his life. Seven other learners were seriously injured and rushed to hospital. That particular accident was considered one of the deadliest scholar transport incidents in the province in recent years. And back then, in July of 2024, there were calls to overhaul the scholar transport sector in order to improve safety and have stricter vehicle and driver checks. And here we are, just over a year later, dealing with another scholar transport accident that's also claimed 12 lives. Before then, in October of 2022, a scholar transport bus that was carrying pupils from Wedela Technical High School also lost control and overturned. In that accident, two pupils were killed, 63 others were injured. The driver reportedly had fled the scene at the time. The incident drew the attention of Gauteng law enforcement agencies and the government. And once again, there were calls and attention to try improve road safety. Another accident that took place in early 2024, a grade 6 pupil from Mudisele Primary School in Harankua died after falling from a moving scholar transport bus and was subsequently overrun by the vehicle, by the wheels of another vehicle. That incident raised concerns about vehicle safety and supervision for learners who are on board scholar transport itself. Again, questions will be raised about what was done to improve the situation. More recently, in July of 2025, in Montgomery Park, that's near Randburg, a scholar transport minibus taxi overturned near West Park Cemetery during the early morning rush hour peak period. Around 20 pupils in that particular accident were wounded. The driver was apparently under the influence of alcohol at the time and was arrested. No fatalities were reported in that crash, but of course it has highlighted this ongoing issue of driver conduct and vehicle operations. I mean, we can really go on and on and on to try to highlight for you just how often we arrive at this situation where there are scholar transport vehicles that are involved in these accidents in ways, after investigations, that we understand were preventable, quite frankly. I need to, of course, stress that we don't want to jump the gun. We don't really know what the circumstances surrounding this particular crash are. What we have been told, at least from preliminary investigations that it seems it was a head-on collision involving a scholar transport vehicle and a truck. The driver of the truck, we understand, has fled the scene, and that lends itself into a criminal investigation. Typically, police will then open a case of defeating the ends of justice because, of course, there'll be many questions that I imagine would be posed to somebody in that particular position. And there's real speculation at this very early stage around what might have happened. We're told that the driver of the scholar transport itself is among the four people who are still fighting for their life after sustaining those critical injuries in the wake of what took place around 7:30 today. The education MEC in Matume Chulwane arrived at the scene. He was, in fact, at a different school where the department is rolling out a campaign to push back against bullying at this start of the 2026 academic year. And upon hearing what happened, quickly changed his diary and rushed to the scene that you're now seeing on your screen to try ascertain what has happened. Our reporter on the ground telling us that he too is too distraught and is not able to engage us at the moment. But of course, there's a real task that lies ahead for him, given the role that he has to play in ensuring that there's overall safety and security in the department he leads in Gauteng. As we were taking in what was taking place in the Vaal on the Golden Highway, the Human Rights Commission was delivering the findings of their own investigation into the state of scholar transport in the Northwest. And I'm just going to take you through some of their main findings as we stay with the visuals from the Vaal in Vanderbijl Park. The Human Rights Commission finding that in the Northwest, thousands of pupils are not receiving scholar transport due to a whole host of issues, including budgetary constraints. We're told that there is chronic overcrowding, poor conditions of these vehicles as well, which lend themselves to systemic and persistent failures, indicating that there are deep-rooted problems in the sector. The Human Rights Commission goes on to find that qualifying students have therefore been excluded from using scholar transport, and that means they miss out on teaching and learning. There are frequent mechanical breakdowns in these cars. Many of them are operating with expired license discs, leaking petrol, or no petrol at all, is some of the issues that they found. The problems have been attributed to failures in the local government. Of course, we know that at a local government level, officials there are meant to be involved in the planning, the implementation, and oversight of scholar transport. And this is, I think, the important piece of information from the Human Rights Commission's findings in the Northwest, saying that these failures constitute human rights violations, including the right to education, to safety and security, as well as the right to protection from neglect and abuse. As a result, the Human Rights Commission in the Northwest, insofar as scholar transport is concerned, has given the following directives. In the next 60 days, we're told the department must submit a progress report to deal with these identified failures, as well as any kind of consequent management measures that will be implemented. In 90 days, they should establish a functional complaint center to ensure that people can report issues without being victimized. And in 180 days, they should review and amend their policy in order to close the gaps and improve this framework. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in the Northwest insofar as scholar transport is concerned, and I imagine a lot of that can also be transferred to the Gauteng province as well. Thabiso Khatebe is our reporter who's been keeping a close eye on the situation.
Meanwhile, Terrorism Index report says that Africa remains a global epicenter of violent extremism. Let's take a listen.
The Sahel, the Lectured Basin, the Horn of Africa, Central Africa, and Cabo Delgado in northern Mozambique are terrorism hotspots on the African continent. According to the 2025 Global Terrorism Index, these regions continue to face a deadly mix of political instability, weak governance, and competition over natural resources. Experts say such factors give extremist groups space to grow.
If you also narrow it down to the weak security sector governance, especially where we see heavy-handedness by security forces, poor judicial elements. So they capitalize on that, use it as a basis for recruitment. We can also bring in the cybersecurity component, where because of the weak framework guiding the usage of the cyberspace, especially cyber accountability, the threat element, capitalize on that and use it as a basis for recruitment, unfortunately.
The Global Terrorism Index uses a five-year weighted average of attacks, death, injuries and kidnappings to rank how badly countries are affected. Burkina Faso, Mali and Nigeria lead the list of the 10 African countries most affected by terrorism and extreme violence. Kabir Adamu says these countries appear again and again because the conditions that allow terrorism to survive haven't changed. Nigeria and Cameroon continue to battle Boko Haram and the Islamic State in West Africa province. In late 2025, the U.S. carried out airstrikes against ISIS and Boko Haram targets in Nigeria, showing global concern over the threat. In Somalia, Al-Shabaab remains active and still carries out deadly attacks despite years of military pressure. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, armed groups finance terror through gold, cobalt, and coltan, turning natural resources into engines of violence. In Mozambique, an Islamist insurgency in Cabo Delgado continues to disrupt gas projects and trade routes. Experts warn that such widespread violence is helping to feed much larger conflicts, such as the one in Sudan. Despite international appeals to stop the export of weapons into the country, it continues to happen.
Weapons are being ferried into Sudan. One of the things we tried to do is to monitor the prices of the weapons, guns, for instance, that were brought into Sudan. So at a point, an AK-47, for instance, will be selling for about $1,800. But it reached a point where it was going for as low as $100 in certain parts of the Sudan. And so, of course, that means these threat elements will have access to more weapons.
Adamu says these groups will also have access to expertise on the usage of these weapons and people exposed to war strategy who, for one reason to another, cannot be integrated back into society. Efforts to curtail extremism in Africa are yet to yield desired results. Joint military operations and foreign interventions have fallen short of expectations, and Adamu understands where the problem could be.
If you create a web of the linkages between various countries, you would now come to a conclusion where cooperation between them become extremely difficult. So Niger, for instance, will not cooperate with Nigeria at the moment because Nigeria is cooperating with France. Benin, as an example, will not cooperate with Niger because of its relationship, for instance, with France and Niger's relationship with Russia. So that web of interconnectivity between African countries and some of the superpowers is also affecting their own common relationship.
And the impact of these failures have been devastating. People have been killed and displaced. Economies have been destroyed and countries left trapped in cycles of poverty. The 2025 Global Terrorism Index shows Africa carries the heaviest burden of extremist violence. But it is also a reminder that terrorism thrives where opportunity fails and governance collapses. Ending it means fixing more than security. It means fixing the state itself. Enoch Sekoole, CGTN.
Meanwhile, Museveni wins Uganda's presidential election.
On Saturday, Uganda's Electoral Commission declared longtime ruler Yoweri Museveni the winner of the country's presidential election, securing nearly 72% of the vote.
The commission hereby declares the elected president declares candidate Yoweri Tuhaburwa Museveni. Tuhaburwa Kaguta Museveni. the duly elected President of the Republic of Uganda at the presidential elections held on the 15th day of January 2026 for the next 5 years.
The announcement came amid tight security in the capital, Kampala, following an election marred by technical delays, violence and accusations of widespread fraud. In the days around the election, there was also an internet blackout across the country. Voting was disrupted by malfunctioning biometric systems, leaving many voters stranded at polling stations. At least 7 people were reported killed in election-related violence. Opposition candidates have cried foul over this, and so have observers.
The nation noted with concern the shutdown of the internet now still on the 5. The action has affected citizens' right to receive information, increases freedom of expression, and has also affected the effectiveness of our mission.
Authorities defended the internet blackout, saying it was necessary to prevent what they called the spread of misinformation at a critical time. Despite the controversy, Museveni's supporters took to the streets to celebrate, hailing the 81-year-old for bringing stability to the East African nation.
I'm really very happy and glad seeing that for this time he has won at a higher percentage even compared to what he won with last time. And this victory comes because of his hard work and dedication and commitment towards the people of Uganda. I want him to even reign more until he is exhausted.
Why I support President Museveni? I've been able to get education. And I've got education from UPE schools, that is universal education, up to the end, up to the university.
President Yoweri Museveni is a good leader for 35 years. Since I was born, I've never seen wars in Uganda. And he has brought peace in Uganda. He has built houses. For all people have become rich, and all women, they have peace of work. All of them, they are working.
Museveni, who has ruled Uganda since 1986, now begins another 5-year term. However, questions will remain over how he won the election and the state of Uganda's democracy going forward. Meanwhile, with this term expected to be Museveni's last, analysts believe it may be one dominated by an internal battle to succeed him. Sharon Baranga, CGTN.
The Syrian government, Kurdish forces, agreed to end clashes.
After days of heavy fighting, the Syrian government and the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces have struck a wide-ranging deal to bring Kurdish-run civilian and military authorities under central government control. The agreement follows clashes in the northeast, where Syrian troops seized territory, including key oil fields. U.S. Envoy Tom Barrack called the moment a, quote, pivotal inflection point, though he warned that there was still difficult work to be done to finalize details of a comprehensive integration deal. Here is Syrian President Ahmed al-Sharaa signing the deal.
I recommend a complete ceasefire at this time, and I also urge our Arab tribes there to remain calm and peaceful and to allow for the gradual implementation of the agreement's provisions until we achieve complete peace in Syria.
For the SDF, the terms mark a significant setback after more than a decade of running a semi-autonomous region in Syria's northeast. The group confirmed it will withdraw from Deir al-Zor, Syria's main oil and wheat region, and from Raqqa, home to key hydroelectric dams. Both provinces are expected to be handed over within the next 24 to 48 hours, according to a Syrian official. Under the 14-point deal, all SDF fighters will be merged individually into Syria's defense and interior ministries, ending the group's push to leave Kurdish units whole. Control of border crossings, oil and gas fields, and detention sites holding Islamic State detainees will also shift to Damascus, another point the SDF had long resisted. There are some limited concessions. The SDF may nominate officials to assume key central government roles, and Asake province will get a consensus-appointed governor. But the SDF must also expel foreign members linked to the Kurdistan Workers' Party, a militant group which fought a decades-long insurgency in Turkey. Kurdish concerns about Sharaa's government have been deepened by sectarian violence last year, when nearly 1,500 Alawites and hundreds of Druze were killed, some in execution-style killings. SDF leader Mazloum Abdi is set to meet Sharaa in Damascus on Monday.
Meanwhile, talks on Trump's tariffs would be a hit to UK growth.
Trade threats and data risks. Can the UK withstand the pressure? President Trump's latest tariff threat over Greenland is a blunt reminder. No trade deal is ever final. The UK has so far dodged the worst of the tariffs, but that could change fast, with Trump planning a 10% tariff starting in February. At the same time, UK markets are off to a strong start this year, but upcoming data will put that to the test. So can the UK economy still outrun the risks? Danny Stoilova is Europe economist for BNP Paribas Markets 360. So Danny, let's start with Trump's latest tariff threat. Levies rising to 25% in June. That's unless a deal over Greenland is reached. So how damaging would that be for the UK economy?
I want to preface my answer by saying that there is still a little bit of uncertainty around the exact implementation of these tariffs that were mentioned over the weekend, including due to the looming Supreme Court decision on the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. However, if we take these tariff threats at face value and if we assume that an additional 10% will be applied on all UK goods, our modelling suggests that this would be a hit of 0.1 to 0.2% on the level of UK GDP. But that's just the direct impact of the tariffs themselves. There are other factors to consider, including if there's a rise in uncertainty that can impact business sentiment and consumer decisions, as well as if there's any retaliation coming from the UK or other European countries. So we'll definitely be on the lookout for more detail on these factors before we embed anything in our base case over the next few weeks.
Well, let's turn to the upcoming data now, and inflation is expected to pick up in December after a sharp fall in November, but the Bank of England has warned about this. So do you see meaningful disinflation ahead?
Indeed, we do expect to see a marginal pickup in the headline inflation rate in December to 3.3% year on year. But we ultimately think that this will be short-lived and that there is disinflation ahead. In fact, we think that by the middle of 2026, we'll be hovering around the BOE's 2% inflation target. And that's the result of a few very fundamental things, including first, the ongoing cooling that we've seen in the labor market passing through onto wage growth, base effects and services inflation, including due to water bills, and finally, some of these impacts that we've seen on the autumn budget, including the removal of energy levies from household energy bills. So definitely think that the story ahead is one of disinflation, and it should be supportive for further BOE easing ahead.
So let's look closer at the employment reports, and do you expect Tuesday's unemployment data to confirm that the jobs market is losing momentum?
Thank you for the question, Peter. I mean, I think the cooling that we've seen in the labor market so far has really been a necessary prerequisite to bring down domestic inflationary pressures. And what will matter from here is whether we see this cooling in the labor market continue, exacerbate, or if we stabilize around current levels. Our base case is really the latter, that we stabilize with unemployment around that 5.1% level and that we start to see a little bit of an improvement in the latter half of the year. However, if we do enter this risk case scenario where labor market cooling goes beyond what we expect, then that really does risk taking us into a more disinflationary territory. And that opens the door to potentially even more easing from the Bank of England.
Well, as you said, with more easing from the Bank of England being priced in, how much do you expect this year? And could renewed tariff risks accelerate that shift?
We have a slightly out of consensus view on the Bank of England. We do expect one more rate cut this year in March for a temporary terminal rate of 3.5%. And after that point, we expect the BOE to deliver a bit of a prolonged pause until it has very clear evidence that these inflationary pressures have subsided. We think that it will have that evidence by the turn of the new year. And so we expect the BOE to resume easing in Q1 2027 and to cut two more times for a true terminal rate of 3% by the middle of next year.
Well, Danny, that's finished with sterling, and hedge funds have built up bullish bets on sterling in recent weeks. But the pound does tend to struggle in risk-off episodes. Should we expect weakness ahead?
Peter, you're exactly right that sterling tends to be seen as a high beta currency. So when equities underperform, sterling tends to as well. And in fact, our FX strategy team here does see scope for a little bit more weakness in sterling, particularly against the euro. But this extends beyond just this near-term risk-off story and ties back into the fundamentals. And one of these fundamentals that really is going to impact this is interest rate differentials. So while I just mentioned that we expect the BOE to continue easing all the way into 2027, we think that the ECB is actually going to stay on hold for the foreseeable future and resume actually hiking rates in 2027. So this is something that should play a big role in the sterling weakness that we expect ahead, more than just the short-term news flow.
That was Danny Stoilova from BNP Paribas Markets 360. Don't forget, you can watch more videos on Reuters.com.
And with that, we have now come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkona Nadingi program brought to you by Loise Shimi as she brings you our news bulletin in Oshiwambo. Now, of course, from Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place, same radio frequency, same website, and of course, same radio app. If you haven't downloaded it already, please do download Eagle FM Namibia at your Google Play Store, from your Google Play Store or Play Store. Now, goodbye.